Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is December 1st, 2015. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We have a special show today, welcoming our old friend Garrett Oliver to the show. And we're also happy to welcome back our fall co-host Stephen Villand and our winter co-host Ann Becerra. And also our good buddy Kyle from the Randolph Bar. So this show is brought to you by Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. If you have any questions for us, you can tweet us live at beer_sessions. So let's get to beer. So we've been joking around, Stephen, Ann, and Kyle, you're new to the show. We've been joking. We have Garrett Oliver on, and some guests, listeners have already said, hey, this is your best guest. This is the guy we want to listen to. But you've really got a great story, and I think of the explosion of so many new breweries and everything. It's just a privilege to have you back.
What they said, actually, Jimmy, is he talks a lot, which is not actually the same thing, but I appreciate the thought.
That's it. Now we're setting the tables. This is how we're going to be. We're gonna drink a couple of beers and get our bearings because we've all had long working days in the industry. You know, Stephen, everybody say a little bit what they do in the beer industry because we've got some great people in this room.
Sure. Yeah, this is Stephen Valland, owner of Brooklyn Brew Shop. We make beer making kits, sell them all over the country. Just recently did a great one with Garrett and Brooklyn Brewery, so you can make Sriracha Ace. And yeah, it's a fun holiday times.
Good one.
Hi, I'm Kyle Kinsrew. I'm general manager at Randolph Beer and also a certified Cicerone. So best part of the job, I get to pick the beers we get to drink.
Well, welcome to the show. You're just featured in an article in Brooklyn Magazine with your Thanksgiving beer picks.
Yeah, I got to pick Transmitter, the Beer de Garde they have there, which is a great beer to pair with just about every bit of the Thanksgiving feast. So it was really cool for Anika to do that.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. I'm sure we'll have you on again, too.
Hi, Jimmy. Ann Becerra here of Blind Tiger and Taproom 307, and pretty much anything having to do with beer, I'm in it. Writing and teaching,
that's
and
right.
Talking, all that jazz.
And that's why I'm here, and we're excited to have you on.
I'm excited
morning.
To be here.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And Garrett, welcome to the show, man.
Well, about half an hour ago, I was pouring cocktails, so I don't know what any of you talking about.
where were you pouring cocktails?
In the offices at the brewery. You know, we're working on a beer that's based on the old fashioned, which is probably overall my favorite drink, the one I make the most. And so we were working out, all the various spices and things that go into the bitters fraction. Very, very tricky. It's going to be fun. We have a nice rye beer in the barrel for about 9-10 months now. Strong rye beer, already infused with some spices, and then we're going to, bring the rest of it up to kind of give us the bitterness of gentian root and all the other things that are going on there. So it's fun to tease that stuff out.
That's definitely a beer that I want to try when it comes out.
Should be fun.
Do you have a name for it yet?
Improved Old Fashioned.
Oh, yeah.
Why get cute?
Now, when we were first sitting around before, we were sitting at the bar at Roberta's out here in Bushwick, and we wanted to say, what would we talk to you about? We kind of came up with the idea of talking about your greatest hits. But why don't we talk about this latest hit? If you're, what's the process of planning out a beer like this? Because you definitely put a lot of thought into it, and you've been such an innovator.
Well, first of all, I'm going to protest on behalf of the other guests, of which there's a whole room full. They're going to get awfully bored if I, go on about greatest hits. But on this particular subject, it's a fun one. I often say that my nearest peers in many ways are not really winemakers, but chefs, and also cocktail makers are people who really, have a very special thing going on. Because they can try flavor combinations in almost infinite variety. You can try 15 or 20 things even in an afternoon, whereas a brewer can only move so fast. If you're a winemaker, you're moving even more slowly and you only have one ingredient. And so seeing the creativity with which people put together ingredients is fascinating. And I've always loved the tension of a good old-fashioned, which if you step over the line a little bit too sweet, a little bit too bitter, whatever, and it goes out of balance, it's no longer a great drink, but when it's done correctly, it's beautiful.
So what about you, Stephen? If you were making an old-fashioned inspired beer, what would you put in it?
We put one out over the summer. It was pretty fun. We used citrusy hops. We added oak chips that you can soak in bourbon and rye, which is a pretty easy way at home to get some hint of that rye character. Just make it boozy and pretty light in alcohol, and try not to go too heavy on the sweetness.
Garrett, you've made some other cocktail-inspired beers, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, the first one was back in 2007 or so, called Manhattan Project, obviously based on the Manhattan. Did that with Dave Wondrich, who's probably the greatest cocktail historian in the world and a great writer and a good friend. And later on, we ended up doing a beer which was originally called the Tonic, and then the TTB told us that we were promising a medical benefit. It's like maybe in 1850, but I don't think anybody goes to a doctor and says, "Here, take this tonic." You'd be a little bit worried. There was a beer based on the penicillin, which is an unusual cocktail: Scotch, ginger, honey, and lemon. And it was one of the more controversial beers that we ever did. I'll put it that way. We loved that beer, and some people did. Draft Magazine called it one of the top 25 beers of that year. And it was usually the first to kick at festivals, but some people really, really hated it. And it's always interesting with these things because, if you're putting out a beer that mimics something, you almost have to wonder, well, do people know what the original is? In the case of the penicillin, clearly they would not. And so will it stand by itself? I think the part we didn't figure out was that people will not have necessarily got the basic information. This is based on a cocktail that has Scotch, ginger, honey, and lemon. 8-10 words. We put out all this material, but when it got to the bar, in many cases, the bartender would just say, "New pale ale from Brooklyn Brewery." And yeah. So...
Is that how you sell it, Ann?
That's not how I sell it, but that's how I hear it quite a bit. Things like that, at least.
Can you sell a complex beer?
Absolutely. I think the most important thing with any of these complex beers is providing context. And I feel like it's the same with sours. It's the same with something overly hoppy. For people to understand what to expect, and when they get it, it's not such a shock to their system. Introducing people to sours, a light sour saying, "You drink lemonade, right? Think about this," or an oaky old world red wine or something like that. They're expecting something... a little more unusual, and it's not such a shock, and they're a little more open-minded.
And what about for you, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, some of my favorite interactions with people at the bars are when they're like, "Oh yeah, let me have a Bud Light." I don't have that, but I have this, and it's introducing them. So being able to take a beer what would have been similar to the penicillin, and being able to introduce that flavor profile to somebody that's never even, would have even thought about ordering that is really cool, because you get to see that aha moment in their eyes, and they light up and "Oh my gosh, I never knew beer could taste like this." And you're like, "Yeah, beer can taste like so many, varied flavors. It's amazing." So that's one of the greatest things, is you be able to teach those people.
But it often takes a lot to put these things together. I mean, the Scotch we got from distillers, peat smoked malt. So that fraction, it was obviously a barrel-aged beer. We had a very hard, we use a lot of honey anyway from upstate New York, so no problem there. But... ginger, how to use the ginger. We tried a whole bunch of different ways, ended up with frozen minced ginger from a very good company, 33 pounds per 50 barrels, done like dry hopping. We had to test that out, so that we'd know what it would do. And then finally, the lemon juice. I figured, okay, we can get some kind of frozen lemon juice or, something. Every lemon juice I could find in the United States had preservatives in it. Every single one. I could not find just straight lemon juice with no antioxidants or whatever else, because lemon juice turns brown and people don't want brown lemon juice. So we actually ended up getting lemon juice from Italy. It was organic lemon juice from Italy, and it came 1 liter at a time. We emptied two pallets, two or three pallets. I still get emails from that company wanting more orders for their lemon juice. Come on, you need some more lemon juice, don't you? But, you know, that was a great beer to be able to do. But sometimes I think you run into, and I'm sure the bars run into the same thing, when you have a complicated beer. I mean, we had one recently called Quinteceratops that, you know, aged in rum barrels. It was rum and bourbon barrels, but mostly rum. And the thing that I miscalculated in a way was that people aren't, you know, I'm a cocktail geek, so I'm used to really funky rum. When I think rum, I don't think Bacardi. I think like Smith and Cross, things like this. And serious rum is really, really funky. It's a scary funky for people who aren't familiar with it. But I'm so used to it that I didn't think of it as a weird flavor.
Good, like real barrel-aged dark rum.
Yeah, and it tastes like, you know, blackstrap molasses, you know, sulfur, you know. Dave Wondrich wrote some great articles about it. I mean, how, you know, it was so terrifying for a lot of people, they kind of stopped making it for a while. When we got that beer to Sweden, people loved it. And I was like, I can't figure out why they love it. And other people are like, ugh, I don't know. And it's partly because they drink this Swedish punch that's full of arrak. And arrak is this really, like, palm-based, funky spirit that is very similar to those types of rums. And they're like, yeah, of course we know this flavor. You know, but some people have loved that beer, and some people have really hated it. Got an email just today. It's like, man, it tastes like this and that. And the other thing, I'm like, yeah, I know. I love that.
You know? Let's talk about the beer we have in glass right now. I'll take a little more of it. It's really great.
Oh, I'm not drinking it.
Yeah, come on.
I need to get some here.
And I'm amazed at the number of beers. Let's talk about the beer in glass, and then I want to talk to you about Sweden, too. So,
cheers. So this is insulated lager. It's a new a new winter beer. Cheers.
Cheers, everybody.
It's a great sound.
Cheers, guys.
The church bells, as we say.
Yeah.
The call here was for a drinker, so to speak. You know, it's you're going to stay in the pub for like 3 or 4 pints. You know, what are you going to have? And I wanted something that was dry enough for you to want to stick with it. It had just enough roast and other characteristics to keep it interesting, but it wasn't jumping all over the place and like beating you over the head. You know, it's kind of a good conversationalist. You know, and it can go with a lot of foods and hang out. And so it's based on Schwarz beer. A lot of debittered. Roasted malts, etc. But just getting that balance right, you know, just enough bitterness, just enough.
I love this beer. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's what I'm looking for, too, like a good black lager, Schwarz beer, a little more color, and I think more people are open to drinking this.
And what about the heavier foods, too, in the winter.
What about for you guys at your bars? Would this go over well?
Yeah, I actually just had this the other night with some chocolate chip cookies, and it was fantastic. Some oatmeal chocolate chip cookies. It was perfect, and it was after a couple glasses of wine. So it was really refreshing, kind of refreshed my palate and wasn't kind of like more of the same. It was really good.
Steve, what have you ever made a beer of this style, like a black lager?
I haven't made too many Schwarz beers. I mean, when you are brewing at home, it's not a style that you that is the easiest to recreate, mainly because it takes a little time and needs a little, you know, an extra fridge that's a little colder than your room and a little warmer than your fridge. So usually stick to ales for the most part. But this is really nice, and I really like how the
cheers. I mean, it's evolved, right? I mean, I know when you first got started, you were inspired by your trip to England. And you're talking about cask beers and different flavors. Do you feel like that people are coming full circle now, like appreciating?
Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just got back from the UK. We're finishing up a project. Actually, I have one beer that's kind of similar to it. You've had some of these beers before that we've aged on wild sediments from other fermentations. So usually they've been based on wine fermentations, so wild yeast from wine fermentations. In this case, it was a cider fermentation. It's the Lancelot, the one with the purple. Might take a little bit of work to get through that, but I'm sure that I'm about to say, like, I think you're not going to have any problem here. I can't guarantee that it's not going to be frisky after the car ride, so
give it a little TLC.
Yeah. What I was basically saying is don't open it in your lap. I have made mistakes like that before.
I know. This is a great day, man. So Sweden, let's just talk about that because we're kind of going backwards. So you have traveled the world. You've done so many great things. How did you guys end up doing a project in Sweden? And tell us more about the culture and what they expect from their palate over there.
Well, you know, Sweden is an interesting case because people kind of wonder. They say, yo, you sell a lot of beer in Sweden. And they get over there and like, oh, my God, you're everywhere. And we've been there for like 12 years. And not just sending beer there, but going there. We've been there like every year. You know, many of us. I've been traveling to Scandinavia since, you know, 2003 on a really regular basis. So, you know, we have relationships. And, you know, Carlsberg actually is our importer over there. And it was really started with them. They looked at this great historical site on the harbor in this area called Hammarbystad. And
what can I say? How to practice?
Yeah.
Bless you.
Yeah. Hands ready for it.
Yeah. So yeah, the brewery is called Neue Kanige Bryggeri.
All right.
So
can you say that again one more time, please?
Neue Kanige Bryggeri. And so, yeah, I'm starting to get to the point
Carnegie
where people
Brewing.
Don't turn around. It's a new Carnegie Brewery, and named after the Carnegie, the old Carnegie brand, Carnegie Porter, which of course is quite famous and the oldest trademark in Sweden of any type. And so,
I didn't know that either.
So we're kind of bringing that back, and it's a it's a joint venture, and you know we've got a head brewer there, Anders Wendler. So Anders Wendler, when we hired him, was simultaneously the technical director of the second largest brewery in Sweden and the champion homebrewer of Sweden at the same time.
You're saying it's a small country?
Yeah, yeah. No, well, I'm saying that no one man should have all that power.
Yeah.
So you gave him more.
Yeah, exactly.
But for you, it must be a great experience. Being part of that.
It's tremendous. And, we've started holding technical conferences there, and we get all the brewers in Sweden together, and, you know, we exchange information, et cetera. I'm going to be over there next month, hanging out in Malmö and in Stockholm. And, not my favorite month maybe to be in Stockholm, but I've been there so many times that literally, like, I walk into shops and things, and people are like, hey, how are you doing? How's the brewery? I mean, like, people know you. So I got my favorite restaurants,
We have many listeners for the show in Sweden who've come to the States and visited us. So what's the craft beer scene like there?
You know, it is it's pretty vibrant. It is a small country, so you got about 10 million people. But you've got about, I'd say at this point, probably about 70 or 80 breweries at least. And they're in a phase where it seems like one opens every 5 days, kind of like here. And so it's really very interesting to watch the evolution.
That's great. All right. We're off to a great start on our new show tonight, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Hi, this is Harry Rosenblum, host of Feast Your Ears here on Heritage Radio Network. This is my first season as a host, but at the Brooklyn Kitchen, we've been supporting Heritage Radio for many years, and I really believe in what Heritage does. It is a fantastic network that really highlights everything that is going on in food in America, from restaurant openings to farms, to my show, where I feature interesting people with interesting stories related to food. But Heritage is a not-for-profit. We don't make any money. Most of the hosts do this because we love to do it, and we really do need your help as listeners. We'd love to have you listen, whether you can give any money or not. The website will still be up. You can still stream your favorite shows. But if you do like the programs here on Heritage Radio, we really would encourage you to go to the website, heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart in the upper right-hand corner, and give whatever you can. If you drink coffee every afternoon, while you listen to shows on Heritage, then maybe you can give us the cost of a cup of coffee once in a while. If you want to become a larger member, there's all kinds of great things you get if you become a member of the station and a larger supporter. So please join me, join the Brooklyn Kitchen, join our other great sponsors, and become a member.
missing on this?
All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. And you just heard that message. We are heritageradionetwork.org. Go there. If you're not a member, become a member. If you're not a business member, become a business member. If you want to support us, check it out. We're going to have some messages later in the show about how you can get more involved in heritageradionetwork.org.
And if you don't, Steven's going to kill this puppy, which, frankly, I think is terrible.
It's not
terrible. I mean, I think it's awful. I mean, I know you want to help the station, but I mean,
I don't like the way it's looking at me.
Don't do it, Steve.
Aaron, how much money do we need to raise tonight?
I know it's a lot. It's so cute, though. Come on,
get on the microphone. How much money do you need to raise? Because get Garrett over here so he can convince people to do.
Yeah,
a lot of things.
We are $5,000 short of our Giving Tuesday goal.
So Garrett said, "Wait, there's a puppy here."
Right, that was the only sound effect I had for you. Sorry.
He's got a puppy in the room. And what's going to happen?
No, Steven said awful things. I mean, what can I do for you?
Just a couple MacBooks.
He looks so
nice.
You
can do it, guys.
You know, but it's always the calm ones.
So what do we go, Aaron? What do? We go to heritageradionetwork.org, and what can we do?
You click on that puppy. Yeah, you click on that big bleeding heart, and you select make a donation, and then in the drop down menu, you can actually select that Beer Sessions Radio sent you, and you can write us a message about what we should do to save the puppy.
Man, I think it's a viral thing. You know, we're going to start dumping buckets of water on our heads.
A new car. No.
And then Garrett will send you a new car.
Yeah, exactly.
Just keep that in the notes.
Please.
Thank you. That's so generous of you, Garrett. I appreciate it.
So you got a beer in the glass.
We got a beer in a glass. This is all about.
It's called Lancelot. It's one of the ghost bottles. So those are the many things. I think we figured out this year. We tried out about 70 different things, and this is one of my favorites. It's a
one second, Garrett. Tell us what Ghost Bottles is, because you guys have this great place, the Brooklyn Brewery in Williamsburg. And you're doing a lot of cool things.
Yeah, well, they're the beers that you see and the beers that you don't see. And the beers that you don't see actually outnumber the beers that you do see. And so there's a lot of things that we make for ourselves. They are small projects. Sometimes they can't be replicated. Sometimes we can get ideas from them. And one of them is taking wild yeast from those other fermentations and adding them into beer in barrels for long periods of time and letting the wild yeast of the countryside take over the beer. In this case, the underlying beer was Sriracha Ace, spent a year in a wine barrel with Lee's from the Bellwether Winery in upstate New York, great winery that is doing 100% natural fermentation. Not so many people are doing
it. They're a great cider maker, too.
Yeah, they're great cider makers as well. We've done stuff with Oyster River here in the States, with Tom Oliver's in the UK, right here in town with Red Hook Winery, you know, who we first did that with. So wherever we can find natural yeast sets, you have an opportunity to express a piece of countryside through its biology. And so what happens is that whatever small amount of residual sugar is left in the beer, in the case of Sriracha Ace, it's very low, 1%. This beer now has no residual sugar at all. And so all the sugar has been eaten by the wild yeast. You have some natural Brett going on. You don't have acidity, not much anyway. But that's
a good point. Let's ask our tasting panel here, because you're saying that there's hardly any residual sugar. To me, this is a very dry beer. How do you have a dry beer without being acidic or sour?
Well, I think that, you know, people often will look at, you know, flavors like Brett, and they think that they are related to sourness, which in fact they're not. So Brett doesn't give you any acidity. But it often shows up in the same place at the same time. So people put them together, you know, in a lot of funky beers, sour beers. They will also have Brett in them, but it's lactobacillus of various types that are giving you the sour part.
And Anne, if you taste this, just talk us through your tasting notes. How would you taste this beer?
I'm going to have to refill, so we're going to have to start with him. It was too good.
I know. It's great. I'm on my second glass.
But that dryness, yeah, the fruity
third
notes
glass.
And that the spicy, yeasty flavors really just popped. And I finished it.
What about for you, Steven?
Yeah, I'm surprised. That's like a nice, really soft character. It's a very mild yet intensely flavorful. And it makes me want to, I mean, I love natural wine whenever I get the chance. So it's always I'm obviously drinking a ton more beer. So whenever I can combine those two things, I'm pretty much in a happy place.
We're kind of where I wanted to go. Some were talking about styles, but I guess we can talk about tasting. Because for me, I'm confused when I talk to customers. It's like people want a sour beer and others wild yeast beers. I don't really often know how to describe a sour beer to someone who wants a sour. Because everyone, I think they have a different expectation of what a sour beer is going to be.
You know, it kind of brings up, you know, I brought a sour with me. You know, and it's one that you'll probably see from us more widely in the spring. But my favorite line from the movie Spinal Tap, it's a fine line between clever and stupid. And I kind of feel that way about sour beers. It's sort of like, okay, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody like this far and no further, but like this is really nice, and you just step just over the left, and that's not nice anymore, you know. And I think that in a way that people refer to a lupulin shift, where people get so used to hoppy beers that their taste buds are almost skewed in that direction. They can't, you know, and it happens to people who are used to spicy food and things like that. And the same thing happens with sour beers, where, you know, beers just aren't sour enough. And they make them sourer and sourer and sourer until there's a very tiny subset of people who can actually drink them. And I think there's a way of providing a nice balance for that. And those are really the sour beers that I tend to like. But I think the great brewers are great at that, like Vinny Salerzo, Russian River. Those beers are always beautifully balanced.
Yeah, you always come back to balance is what you're really trying to go for. You don't necessarily want to drink a Warheads in a glass.
Quick question. Where did the idea come from to use the yeast from other types of fermentation? How did that come about?
And can you give me a refill?
Yeah, right? It's like white. Oh, so good.
Well, one day I was visiting with my friends at the Red Hook Winery, and we're tasting some of their wines. And Abe Scherner is their winemaker on the kind of more natural side. He's quite famous, you know, kind of one of the heads of kind of natural wine in the United States. And they said, oh, we've got some lees for you, L-E-E-S, you know, the sediment at the bottom of the... and I'm saying to myself, yeah. And you know, you ever have somebody offer you something they clearly think is a gift? but you don't really think it's a gift? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, well,
don't
why...
a gift horse in the mouth.
Why would I, you know, like, why would I want the lees? And they said the lees are magical. I'm like, magical. Okay, so I take this bucket and I throw it literally in the front seat of my car. I take it back to the brewery and I said, we're going to fill a barrel full of local one, our sort of strong golden, and we're going to add in these lees. And everybody said, well, like, why? I'm like, I don't know. Let's see what happens. And we went back to it 6 months later and we were like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like, do you have any more lees?
It was magical.
Yeah, they were magical. So, but it really, they have to be actual natural fermentations. That's what really makes it happen. If it's just regular fermentation from a regular winery, it doesn't work. And most people who say they're doing natural fermentation, about 95% of them are lying.
That's a great question. Let's jump back to your classics. Sriracha Ace. Kyle, tell us, you said you're featuring it and as part of your beer program.
I love keeping the 22-ounce bombers of Sriracha Ace on a Randolph because we do a cheese and meat plate for two people, so it's great to have that. You know, you're sharing the cheese and meat. You can share the bottle of Sriracha Ace, and frankly, for me, it's one of the best pairings I've ever had because it just cleans up anything from the cheese, anything from the meat. It just kind of finds harmonies in each of the items on the plate, and it's great.
It's a great player with goat cheese, especially you get something like Westfield Westfield, like bulk chev, just, you know, bright, fresh,
Massachusetts,
you know, yeah, Massachusetts,
Capri chev,
and it's just like, ta-da. I don't know if you've had, Lord Sriracha yet?
No.
You know, the 9.5% version. It's kind of like, it's essentially based on Bonvo, on DuPont's Bonvo.
You've had it, Ann?
Yeah, we shared.
See, Ann's great. You can't. She smiles a lot when she gets it. She's like, I have it.
Well, no, I'm just.
I'm smiling.
He and I share the same Desert Island beer of Saison DuPont, and when I hear him talk about the inspiration, I'm like, yes, that's great. So to be inspired by that is even.
And even
more
it's
exciting.
You know,
it's avec le bon.
Avec le bon vin de la Brasserie DuPont. So it's with the best wishes of the DuPont Brewery. It's the it's their basically a Christmas beer, and from
it's also 9.5%.
Yeah, 9.5, maybe even 10. And from the first days of making Sriracha Ace back in 2009, I said, boy, this would be really fun to do almost like in a bon vo kind of fashion. So it's a big bruising beer. It's 75 IBUs. It's really quite dry. And it's very intense, and people are like, wow, it goes down really easy. And I'm like, watch out. It's going to sneak up on you, hit you in the back of the head. But I love that beer, but I'm a little bit scared of it.
How did you first come up with Sirachis?
Really, just checking out that hop. You know, it only was released in 2008. In 2009, I smelled it, and it was literally... You know, usually I want to say, like, I tasted it. It sounds so much better than I smelled it. You know, it's like, he's like, oh, I tasted the grape. I tasted the whatever. It's like, no, I smelled that hop. Or I rubbed it, but it was pellets. So, in any event, it's the only ingredient I ever, you know, checked out that kind of spoke to me. And I could have basically pulled up a napkin and written the recipe on it in 30 seconds. Like, it was like a bolt of lightning, and that was it. And, you know, people say, oh, does that happen to you all the time? I'm like, no, that was the one time. You know, in 26, 27 years of professional brewing, that was the one time that ever happened.
Yeah. And is that something that you've carried a lot over the years?
Sirachis is one of my favorite beers. Definitely one of my favorite beers that Brooklyn makes, one of my favorite American
beers.
So
if I come into Tavern 307 or Blind Tiger and you're behind the bar, what would you tell me about that beer? How would you sell it to me? I'm like, I don't know what I want.
Well, you know, it depends on... I tend to ask people what they want and then find out what they like. So I'm actually bringing this on Friday because I'm doing a segment about champagne lovers, you know, beers for champagne lovers. And I think it's a great intro into craft beer because, again, the flavors are so welcoming. It's effervescent. It's bubbly. It's dry. It's incredible with food. There's just so many pluses that it's... If you don't like that beer, I don't really know what your choice of alcohol would be.
It's also very good with roast pork, too.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of my, you know, favorite things about DuPont is that it's, you know, the word I used, you know, is promiscuous. Like, it kind of goes with everything. You know, it's like it can go with the steak and it goes with the salmon, which is really an amazing ability for it. And I think that Sirachi kind of has some of that going for it.
And, Stephen, you made a beer kit with the Sirachi Ace recipe, right?
Yeah. It was an important beer to us. I remember when you poured like unmarked bottles of it at, I think it was Good Beer at BAM in 2009. It was our very first beer festival that we participated in. So it always had a special place in our heart. So yeah, we brewed up a ton of test batches and really, really happy with
so people can buy your Brooklyn Brew Shop kit,
yeah,
and they can make their own homebrew.
Yeah, you can.
That's pretty cool.
Recreate in your own kitchen something.
Yeah, and then you know, kind of keep tweaking it until you think that it's going in the direction that you want. I think it's kind of fun because that's what I do when I'm cooking. You know, I often will get inspired by something I tasted in a restaurant. And, you know, I say to myself, like, basically, I'm going to go home and knock that off, you know. And there are, like, my crab cake recipe, which is up on our website. I basically stole that from Tabla, you know, Floyd Cardo's.
I miss that place.
Oh, man, I miss that place. And I feel slightly guilty because I don't know, it was 2005 or 2006. My recipe was published in the New York Times. Now, it wasn't like he told me what it was, but I kind of had teased it apart. And when he finally later came out with his own book and I saw his recipe, it was really almost exactly the same. And I was kind of ashamed and proud at the same time. I'm like, you know, I totally nailed that. You know,
I think so. He copied your recipe. That's what
I know. I don't think so.
Publishers will often tell you if you change two ingredients, it's yours. So for any aspiring writers out there.
All right.
Sea salt instead.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, once again, heritageradionetwork.org. Check us out. Support us today. Trying to raise some money, and we just put in a great new website. But Garrett Oliver here, he's really threatening. There's this puppy in the room.
Look, I didn't threaten anybody. It's a beautiful puppy, and but Steve, he just won't let go. He's saying, if you don't raise some money, this puppy's going to get it. And I would never do
a
thing like that.
Too.
He's already had enough trouble, and now look at this.
Somebody start this hashtag Save the Puppy, I think Heritage Radio Network needs to raise another $5,000 today. So go to the site, heritageradionetwork.org, and what?
Save the puppy. I mean, come on, Stephen. What did it ever do to you?
didn't
I know how to save the puppy. We're talking greatest hits of Garrett Oliver tonight on this show, and it's another reason to support the network, because we've got over 300 episodes with the pioneers of craft beer and cider now. But Black Ops, I'm going to ask you about that great beer, because when that came out a few years ago, I remember one night these regular customers came in, and they bought six bottles of Black Ops 750 for six guys, and they came in for it. And so I know that people love it. I love that beer. How did you ever come up with that beer?
Well, I mean, it wasn't like it was all that early, in the evolution of barrel-aged beers. So certainly, there were other barrel-aged stouts that were already out there, but most of them were really big, sweet, monsters, of beers. And a lot of them tasted like they had a shot of bourbon in them, as opposed to being well-married. And I wanted to do something that was, in a certain way, more elegant. And a lot of those beers, actually, I like a lot of them. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, I wanted to do something that had that element and was different. And being a cocktail guy, I was looking for something that's balanced. And so people often ask whether Black Ops is really a barrel-aged version of Black Chocolate Stout, which it definitely isn't. They have basically no ingredients in common, which is kind of interesting. And Black Chocolate Stout, despite being not as strong, is actually a much more muscular beer, in a lot of ways. Black Ops is kind of designed, for the barrel to kind of fill out, its character. By itself, before the barrel, it's not, it's a perfectly okay beer, but it's not what it becomes.
The Black Chocolate Stout has a little more roasted malt, doesn't it?
Yeah, a lot more roasted malt. Higher bitterness, a lot more residual sugar. It's a really different beer. And so I think it's kind of an interesting expression of what we want to do with our barrel aging program. And we now have a barrel house over at the Brooklyn Navy Yard. We can hold on to 2,000 barrels at a time.
Actually, I didn't know that.
Yeah, which allows us
to. Did you know that?
I knew that, but I haven't been. Are we even allowed to go?
Well, we could bring you in and show it to you, but the Navy Yard, still you need a pass to get in and whatever else. Such a cool place.
Grab the bus in Dumbo.
Yeah, there are tours, people lead you on. It's kind of a little museum there, and it's super cool place. But in any event, what happened though is that I wanted to make barrel aged beer, and I'm like, I'm going to make 100 cases, 200 cases. And the salespeople said to me, oh, no, whatever you do, do not make this beer. I'm like, what's wrong with you? It's like, we'll be killed. Nobody can get enough. People become very happy. And the thing is, it used to be in the old days. You remember the old days. The old days were great. Before the internet, you call a guy up and you'd say, hey, buddy, I got a thing for you. It's like, oh, you got a thing? It's like, yeah, I got this thing. It's really good. I was like, yeah, send over the thing. So you send him the thing. You slide him to the door. He serves it to his people. It disappears. Everybody's happy. And, you made 40 kegs, and there were 40 guys who wanted it, and that was pretty much it. Now, 15 minutes after the thing goes on draft, you get a phone call from Tony, from Tony's Sports Bar. And the phone rings, and you're like, Tony's got 15 screens, and he sold 400 kegs of Brooklyn Lager last year. And now you're talking to him on the phone. It's like, you know, how you doing, Tony? It's like, you know what, Garrett, I'm not so good. It's like, well, what's the problem? It's like, you know, it's like, I heard you got this new beer with cherries, you know, and you saved it in a barrel for 2 years and then re-fermented it with wild yeast, and everybody's talking about it. I don't see any down here at Tony's Sports Bar. And you're like, dude, you're a sports bar. You're great. But I mean, you're a sports bar. Now you tell me who I am. That's really nice. Now, you know, it's like you knew me before when I was selling the 400 kegs of Brooklyn
really
Lager. Now you don't
really
know me.
You really do have a puppy and you're trying to kill it. Unless you raise $5,000 save the puppy. But, Ann, how is that for you? Like, I remember when Black Ops.
Yeah, you don't tell me you haven't been that person.
What's
you must
about
have been that person.
Special.
So you can ask. I'm not
special
that
allocations not that person. Of special beers like Black Ops.
Listen, I'm.
Even
very,
I'm that person sometimes.
I am blessed to be able to be puppy. In these places that get these. I understand how lucky I am to be in the bars I am and everything. But, you know, if I can drink it, I'm happy. But I see it happening all the time, and I feel so bad for the reps and the brewery people and with those small batch beers, and they come in and they're just getting pounded with calls. I'm taking you off draft because how dare you not send it to me? And it's like you damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know?
Well, I'll say this. I'm really happy that I've had many Black Ops, and I love it. So when does Black Ops come out? It's this time of year, isn't it?
It comes out in October, late October, you know, so it's just out. But, I mean, the first year it came out, like, we didn't – it was basically the first Ghost bottle. We did not release it. You know, we gave it away, a case, to everybody who worked at the brewery. At the time, there were, like, 38 of us. So everybody got a case at the holidays. And but then later you started hearing these stories, like somebody would, you know, talk to you at a party. Hey, my name's Tim. It's like, how you doing, Tim? It's like, I've had Black Ops. You know? And you take a step back, like, who are you? Why have you had Black Ops? What are you doing here? And they would tell you like a story about how they were connected to the brewery. And finally, we decided that if we really pushed hard, we could get out maybe 900 cases. And that's what we did the first year. And now it's not all that much more than that, you know, maybe a few times more. But, I mean, it's, you know, all these are pretty small releases. So, you know, Black Ops is still a pretty small release. You know, it's you know, it's a few thousand cases.
That's pretty special. And what are we drinking now? Because you've really gone, like, I mean, from what we knew you as Brooklyn, you know, Black Chocolate Stout and, you know, Black Ops and Sriracha Ace. And I'm sure you can fill in the gap, local one. But now there's all these special limited bottles, which I think is brilliant. Do you think that the fact that Brooklyn Brewery stayed in Brooklyn and expanded the brewery there, that was really a tipping point, wasn't it, for you?
Well, it was. There were a few tipping points. I mean, when we started doing re-fermentation in the bottle, you know, in 2006, and really dedicated ourselves to that, really dedicated ourselves to the barrel program. And, you know, we've been looking to do some, you know, some sours, you know, that would be available to the public for a few years now. But, you know, when you're running a brewery where you have 25 people on the brewing team and you're, you know, putting quite a bit of regular beer out every day, you do have to be careful. You know, we take the quality side really seriously. And, like, we love Brett. We did a release, Wild Horse that was 100% Brett Porter. But, you know, you don't want Brett in your IPA unless you wanted to do a Brett IPA. And so you have to be pretty careful about that. And we don't have a separate, totally separate facility for those. So we want to do Kettle Sour, and we've been working on it for a while, and we wanted to be able to make sure that we could replicate it. And we really have our technique down pretty good. And, I like this beer a lot. It's called Bel Air. We'll probably release it in the spring. It's a dry hop kettle sour at about 6.5%.
That's what we're drinking now.
And, yeah, and it's
what was
and
the it, hop.
What's the hop? Yeah.
The dry hop is Amarillo, and it's you know, it's sour, but it's not scorching. I mean, you certainly it's, you know, it's quenching. It's dry, but it's really fruity. It has this tropical fruit kind of pineapple character to it, and I can kind of like drink this all day.
Yeah.
It was great.
And so this is kind of the balance that I like to see. I'm not saying I don't like any sourer beers, but this is pretty sour for, you know, it's got quite a bit of, you know, of acidity. And it's interesting to kind of play around with that. And we have our technique down where we can nail it every time. And that's great. I like being able to do that.
You know, on that note, you mentioned Amarillo hops, and I've seen some other breweries using that now. As you and your brewing team, you know, when you're kind of planning things out, what is it like to, A, get your hands on hops, and how do you have to plan for that when you make your beers?
You got to know a guy. In fact, you need to know two or three guys. You know, so it's one thing we've certainly paid a lot more attention to in recent years is, you really have to go and know your farmers. And that's become increasingly important. We used to order hops as if they were commodities. And it had a name, and it had an aroma and a flavor, like you're a restaurant, you're ordering black pepper. Yeah, you didn't know the guy who grew the black pepper, it was just black pepper. Rather than looking at the hops as one of the fundamental ingredients of what we're doing, and coming to know them as the people who grew part of your beer. And what you find out, is that the hops grown by different families, and they largely are family farms. There are about 100 families in the United States that grow hops. Many of them have been in business for about 100 years. And they all taste different. There is a terroir to hops. If you go taste, say Simcoe, grown by Peralt, Carpenter, Loftus, etc., they all are distinctly different. There's a line of something going through the middle that says Simcoe, but there's a lot of variation. And you need to know, what they're doing in order to hold the expression that you want for your particular beer. West Coast versus East Coast. There's a very big difference in what West Coast brewers generally want.
The Amarillo for this beer, where does that come from?
This is coming from Peralt. This is coming from this is Darren Gamache. This is that's Gamache Farms, Virgil Gamache Farms.
That's in Washington State.
And Washington State, Tobinish. Yeah, I was just Sunshine Ranch. I was just there. And it's just fascinating to be in Yakima during hop harvest. Because everything smells like hops. The air smells like hops. The road smells like hops. There's a green stripe down the middle of the road as you're going into Yakima because the hop trucks are running all day and a little bit will fall off the back of the truck over and over and over again, and all the traffic goes over it, and eventually you have this dark green stripe down the middle of the road, and you can just smell it. It's just amazing. It's in the air everywhere, and you kind of come to understand that.
That's beautiful. Let's get everybody, our other guests, let's ask one question each of Garrett, something you always wanted to ask him.
Okay.
Enough of me talking about me. Why don't you talk about me
now? Not about his
now.
Hairstyle. No fashion questions.
Let's say there's a Garrett Oliver music festival, not Brooklyn Brewery, just Garrett Oliver. Who headlines?
LCD Sound System.
All right.
Kyle.
You mentioned West Coast versus East Coast hops. How are you seeing the New York hops coming, the second sort of generation of hops coming out? They're still very young, but...
Still very young. They're oversubscribed, which is good. I mean, they have more people looking for the hops than they have hops. I see Willamette doing really well. I see some Cascade doing really well. I haven't seen anybody growing some of the, big, West Coast bombs yet, but some things are really doing well. And what you really need is people who understand processing, et cetera, and are going to get the quality right off the farm and into a palletized form or into whatever form the brewery is going to use it in. Because unless it's a fresh hop, it has to be processed in some way. And what we are increasingly discovering is that drying temperature, time, etc., is crucial to what you're going to end up with.
Steven?
Sure. Since the theme has been your greatest hits, what would you say is your...
Did you guys know this before I showed up?
Oxford Encyclopedia of Beer.
So what would you say is your next greatest hit?
It's so difficult to say. It's like I kind of feel like I'm not... there are things that I'm certainly proud of. There are things that I'm worried about. There are things that I'm hopeful for. And so we have a nice collaboration we've been working on for a couple of years with our friends at Thornbridge Hall Brewery in UK, which is almost like a version of Local One aged on Tom Oliver cider lees. It's called Serpent. I was just over there for several days with Molly Browning, our barrel master. And we spent, days like hand bottling 27,000 bottles, each, hand bottled, corks by hand, Y-cager, everything. We had a great team. We got it done. Now we're getting the bottles in re-fermentation. Re-fermentation's going well. you know, it's like, but boy, that beer has picked up some extra funkiness either from Brett or maybe the re-fermentation yeast is throwing a little bit of sulfur. It gases off really fast, but you're looking at, it's been in the barrel for a year and a half. Like, is it going to, where is it going to fall in? And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you do everything that you can and you have all of these factors and you have wild yeast. And what many people don't appreciate necessarily is the element of risk. You know, is that, you know, there are things that are sure and there are things that are not sure. And if you're unwilling to do unsure things, then you can't be an artist. And so, you know, you're that which inevitably means that you will fail at some time. You know, the question is, when will it happen and will you have the grace to deal with it?
Garrett, you're such an awesome guy, man. Your voice is better than mine. And I love having the show. But
I don't know if anybody has a better voice than
I'm a better singer than him, though. But, Garrett, last thing. So for our listeners, if they come to New York City, how do they know about the ghost bottle releases and special things that happen at Brooklyn Brewery in Williamsburg? Do they just go to the website? What do they do?
Yeah, the first rule of Ghost Bottle Night is you don't talk about Ghost Bottle Night. We will tweet those things out. So if you follow us on Twitter and Instagram and, you know, and Facebook, you know, you'll find out about stuff that's going on, or you can you know, send us an email and to put so on
BrooklynBrewery.com.
BrooklynBrewery.com. Go check the website. So there's constantly, you know, there are small things, big things, all kinds of stuff going on all the time.
Great. And if you're listening live this weekend, there's two great annual Belgian beer related events in New York City. Mug's Ale House in Williamsburg.
Yeah.
It has their like 10th or 15th annual Belgian something weekend. Go there all weekend. He's got crazy stuff on tap. And Jimmy's number 43. It's like our 7th annual Battle of the Belgians. It started out with all kinds of things, but now it's like we're showcasing just a lot of classic Belgian beers, including Saison and DuPont. And I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Garrett and Stephen and Kyle for joining me here on the Heritage Beer Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Justin Kennedy, Maggie Seiden, and our engineer, Jack Inslee. Again, save the puppy. Support HeritageRadioNetwork.org. How's the puppy doing, guys?
Very sad.
It's still breathing.
He's doing well.
You got to save the puppy. HeritageRadioNetwork.org, sponsor this whole great network.
And no animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah. I will listen. Hey, session next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo-woo!
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.